Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton, the place where we start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle, you're with me. We're going to talk today about something that is not a quarterback. How does that feel?
Let's try not to mention them at all, except I probably mention some college quarterbacks in relation to how I think they may be affected their wide receivers' performance, because there's a couple of guys that I'm maybe a little higher on because of the quarterback play they had, and maybe a couple of guys that I'm a little lower on because of that.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Ooh. But yeah, today we're going to talk about wide receivers.
You're such a tease.
We're going to talk about tight ends. End, at least.
Oh my God, let's talk about a tight end.
We are not going to talk about running backs. This is a bad running back class, and I think the Bears showed you that by giving DeAndre Swift a bunch of money. If the Bears end up drafting a running back, I'm sure it'll be very late and probably not important or worth discussing. So we are not going to prep you for running backs. If you are not a Bears fan and you listen to us, thank you, first of all. But you are like, my team needs a running back. Then go out into the wilderness and find someone else who talks about such things that will not be what Start Kyle Orton provides today. I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to say go out into the wilderness and find a running back.
Go into the woods and find a running back.
There's a running back out there. Put him on the field. You're good. You're all set, man.
No. Absolutely. So wide receivers, I think if you have heard anything about this draft, this 2024 NFL draft, the first thing you've heard is probably that, holy shit, there are a lot of wide receivers in this draft who look like they could potentially be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And you know, we on the Scottcast, we've challenged some narratives lately. I came out hot versus Jaden Daniels. I pushed back against the tide to say that's bullshit. He's overhyped. But here we are, and I'm going to say about these wide receivers, the hype is totally right. There are a lot of really good wide receivers in this class. There's like 10 guys the Bears could walk out of this draft with, any one of them, and I'd be like, yeah, cool. I'm really excited about his potential as a member of this wide receiver core.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, let's do this.
Let's talk. Should we start at the very
top?
Oh
yeah, we're starting at the top.
Top.
So I think we both agree, even with the addition of Keenan Allen, our number one hope for the Bears at pick 9 is still that one of these three guys will be there and that the Bears take them. So, and I think in general, everyone agrees that the top three guys at wide receiver in this draft are Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunza. Now, not everyone agrees what order those three should be ranked. For a while there, seemed like most people agreed it was MHJ, Nabers, Odunza, but then Odunza had a wonderful combine, put up an all-time RAS score, basically. He's drawn them Larry Fitzgerald comparisons, and so he moved ahead in the Malik Nabers there for a little bit in the public eyes. But then Malik Nabers put on a show at his pro day, and there are a lot of people saying that to them, Malik Nabers is ahead of MHJ. So, you know, there actually is some debate here. There is not consensus. There's consensus that these are the three. I have not really seen anybody say, you know, who should be right up there with those three. I haven't really seen anybody I respect do that. Everyone agrees it's these three. But what is the order? And Travis, what is your order? Let's say, miracle of miracles, four quarterbacks go, some offensive tackles, some defensive ends, and somehow one of these three guys is there at 9. And it's your guy, Travis. It's your number one guy. Who's that guy that's there at 9 in your wildest dreams where your number one guy falls?
So to me, there's a very hard order here. I wouldn't even put these guys in the same tier. I would give them each their same individual tier. And number one is just very obviously far and away Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't think there's really much of a discussion. This is not because I don't think Malik Nabers could be better than him. It's because his floor is higher than any wide receiver floor I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, there is nothing that he does badly. There is nothing that he does good. He does everything great. He is, and there are other guys in this draft like Joe Alt, who we're going to talk about in a couple weeks, who it's just like, how is it possible? Next week. We'll talk about offensive linemen next week. But he is just so great at everything. There's no weakness in his game. There, if he fails at one or two of the things you want a wide receiver to do, it's fine because everything else he does is great. So it's very much like a Trevor Lawrence kind of argument where it's just like, I don't see how he fails. You know, I don't see how he's not a great wide receiver.
So for a wide receiver, from a metric standpoint, the things that I really like to try to look at with wide receivers is I like to look at what's known as yards per route run. If you guys don't know what that is, yards per route run, it's really just kind of a measurement of like how often did a guy run an actual route, because a lot of times wide receivers don't actually run routes. You'll look and they might be blocking on a pattern or something, or they might be a decoy. They're not running an actual route. How often did they run a route? How often did they get targeted on that? How many catches yards did those targets generate? Just simply divided by, so for basically. And anything over like 2.5 is generally good at that in this stat. Marvin Harrison Jr. this year was 3.44, which is just it's an absurd number. And if you watched, last year that maybe wouldn't have been that stunning because you have C.J. Stroud throwing him the ball. But if you watched Ohio State this year, if you saw Kyle McCord, the guy throwing Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball, it was really bad. He's not a good quarterback. It's been a little while since Ohio State has had what I would consider to be bad college football quarterbacking, but they did this year. Kyle McCord, if you watch Marvin Harrison Jr., a lot of the deep targets are not catchable. So many of the throws are behind him. The contested catch opportunities, you know, you'd like them to be 50-50 balls. In his case, a lot of them felt like 20-80. And he still caught a reasonable amount. But yeah, so yards per route run, Marvin Harrison Jr. was 3.44. That is an absurd number. I really like to look at contested catch rate, which is how often is a guy bringing in those contested catches. He was at 43.3% this year. I believe he was higher than that last year. I think he'll probably be higher than that in the NFL. Again, like you call him 50-50 balls. Kyle McCord was not giving this guy a good chance at bringing down a lot of these targets, in my opinion, and Marvin Harrison still managed to make more than his fair share. And I really like to look at PFF grade versus man coverage. Because one thing that you see a lot of these college corners struggle with is beating press, is beating man coverage. Because, you know, nowadays in college, so many defenses just run zone. They don't have the corners to really play with some of these wide receivers and some of the speed and these offenses. It's very hard to play man against them. So you get a lot of guys who enter the NFL without a lot of reps against press, against man coverage. You get guys who are used to beating zone, and their receiving stats are very much more about their offensive scheme that they played in than their route running ability or anything like that. Marvin Harrison Jr. had an 82.6 grade versus man coverage this year, which is like well in the 90-something percentile for that. So, I mean, he beats man coverage. He makes contested catches. He doesn't drop the ball. There's just really, I mean, yeah, he's Marvin Harrison Jr. There is nothing really to say there. There has been some, I don't feel, I will say this. I do not think the Malik Nabers wide receiver one talk versus Marvin Harrison Jr. I've heard some people say that's prospect fatigue. I don't believe that is what it is. It's not like the Drake May bashing or anything like that. Malik Nabers is a special, special freaking talent. That guy is acceleration. Is insane. It really is. His ability to change direction without losing any speed whatsoever. It is comical. I mean, he's got Jaden Daniels in the conversation for the number two overall pick. Like that, I don't understand anybody who watched Jaden Daniels this year and didn't come away thinking like, holy shit, Malik Nabers is incredible. Yeah. So I think the Malik Nabers wide receiver one talk is totally legit. I have no problem with anybody who actually is willing to go there. I'm with you though. I am not willing to go there. I think Marvin Harrison, just when you talk about the size speed combo, when you talk about the body control, the way he can be a target on every route in the tree and in the red zone, we've almost talked about this too much already. I don't know. I would not overthink.
Yeah. What do you even say? Not,
yeah. Right? No disrespect though. Like I said, I don't think Malik Nabers wide receiver one is a hot take or people just firing it out there to get attention. Yep. Like a lot of people do this time of year. It is perfectly defensible. In like 99% of drafts, Malik Nabers would be wide receiver one without question. I think, for me though, I still got to go with Marvin Harrison Jr. Yes. If one of them could just fall to nine, it's Marvin Harrison Jr. for me. I would be ridiculously ecstatic.
It would be, I mean, that would be batshit crazy if it happened, but yeah, I would lose my mind if Marvin Harrison Jr. were there at nine. But yeah, I mean, the question with Marvin Harrison Jr. is not, should he be the first wide receiver off the board? It's, is he the best wide receiver prospect that you've ever seen? You know, and I can't think of a guy, and we're talking about prospect. We're not talking about end of career, right? And we got kind of annoyed by a tweet a couple weeks ago. It was like best NFL draft prospects of all time. And it had Tom fucking Brady at the top. And it's like, he was not a good prospect. That's why he fell as far as he did, right? So what I'm talking about is a guy coming out of college.
Honest to God, we could do a whole episode sometime just making fun of that guy's list. Yeah. Because that was like, I was like, one of the worst lists. A list of the greatest NFL prospects of all time, by definition, has to include like 5 or 10 busts. Because like that, they were you're judging them as they were as prospects. Nobody thought Tom Brady was going to do that. He had Joe Montana on there, too. Joe Montana went in the third round. Like, come on,
asinine. Asinine take. But anyway, as far as that goes, as far as we're talking
Marvin
about
Harrison Jr.
prospect,
would be on a legit who
else?
Of that list.
Without who else could you even put on that list? This guy is he's incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, I would take him for a second. For me is also not a question. This, I think, has become more of a question, like you said, because of the combine. But for me, it's Malik Nabers. It is so rare, the skill set that this guy has. And I mean, I think part of the reason he's seen a bit of a boom in recent weeks is not just prospect fatigue, like you said. And that does happen sometimes, because I think if you're going to go out, you're going to watch film and you're going to study a guy, you look at Marvin Harrison Jr. and then you just file that away and say, that's the number one guy. Like, I don't need to really revisit this guy. So it's probably been a couple months since people have really paid attention to MHJ, looked at his tape, gone over it and seen how just incredible and smooth he is at everything. But for Malik Nabers, I think it's just everybody is watching Jaden Daniels tape now. And I think the only thing you get from Jaden Daniels tape is, holy shit, Malik Nabers is good. Like, Malik Nabers is insane. He catches everything. He works hard on every play. Like you said, his explosion, the ability to change direction and not only not lose speed, but it seems like he almost retains his momentum and is going faster.
Oh, yeah, he loses nothing while changing direction. I think he might be one of the smoothest after the catch guys I've ever seen.
Yes. His yak is going to be a thing of legends in the NFL. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, he absolutely could be like a Tyreek Hill without question. Like, I see that so easily.
His ability to get 10 yards open and still catch a ball, which has been underthrown by Jaden Daniels by 5 to 7 yards, is also legendary. Just he's wide ass open. Yeah, he readjusts to the ball, catches it, and he's still gone.
Yeah, he just absolutely dusting guys. Yeah, I mean, for me, Malik is, and I will admit, I thought about this a little harder than you did. I think you were too low on Roma Dunza entering this process. I think
your stats on Roma Dunza changed my opinion on that guy, because the tape on him does not look as good as some of his insane numbers, which I'll let you get into in a bit.
I think that's just a function of how smooth he is. He is one of those flawless athletes. And so I still think the gap between him and Odunda is close. And they're two very different kinds of wide receivers.
Absolutely.
And I will totally admit here that it is comp brain for me, too, that's causing a little bit of this, because I'm not the first person to make this comp, but it is the comp that I made immediately when I was watching him. Several people have said, man, that guy kind of looks like Larry Fitzgerald when talking about Roma Dunza. And Larry Fitzgerald is one of my favorite NFL players of all time.
True.
Watching Kurt Warner and then Carson Palmer with Larry Fitzgerald, I loved everything that guy ever did. So that was the comp that immediately popped in my mind. And it's very hard for me to be like, okay, but this guy could be Larry Fitzgerald. And you want me to pick anyone else? But this is that kind of draft. It is. I do think, and a little bit, part of it also is that I guess I'm kind of looking, and this is not really how you should go about this kind of thing. I'm also thinking from a Bears perspective, like in terms of what they don't have now in that wide receiver room with DJ Moore, with Keenan Allen. I do kind of think the size of Roma Dunza, would be something that they are lacking. Whereas I think Malik Nabers, similar to DJ Moore, but if anything, just a more talented DJ Moore in every way, which is not a knock on DJ Moore. It is telling you how much of a freak, because that's how good, you know how good DJ Moore is. Malik Nabers could be that and then some.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
That's the caliber of, but that's also the type of wide receiver that he is. He's a very DJ Moore type. Part of me thinks, you know, Roma Dunza would be the better fit, but at the same time, you shouldn't pass up the better wide receiver prospect. And not that they're going to pass any of these guys up, in my opinion. And not that if they did, they would have the choice between Nabers and Odunza at 9, I don't think. But, you know, just theoretically, if you were choosing between them. That's a little bit for me, but yes, ultimately, Malik Nabers, still wide receiver 2. It's still close to wide receiver. All three of these guys are clustered closer together for me than I think for a lot of people in different ways. But Malik Nabers, as close to MHJ as you can possibly get. Just some of his numbers for him. 3.64 on the yards per route run, which is just absolutely Looney Tunes crazy. Contested catch rate of 45.5%. Again, very impressive for a dude who is not huge at all. He's not, I wouldn't say he's undersized, but he's like 6'0", 200. He's not, I think he actually weighed in at like 199 at the pro day. So he is not like, he's not big. He's also not like Johnny Knox or something, but he's.
You would be forgiven when watching his tape for thinking he was much bigger than he actually is.
He plays bigger.
Huge.
He plays huge despite also playing like the fastest motherfucker alive.
Yep.
And then his grade versus man coverage, which I said is, again, another thing I really want to see. Want to see this guy just burn man coverage at a collegiate level. And he did that at 90.8 grade versus man coverage, which is maybe one of the highest I've ever seen at the college level. Like, there's no covering this guy. There was not a college corner that could man this dude up. And he's playing
in the fucking SEC. And he is unstoppable. Just like, there was not a team, there was not a game where Malik Nabers was coverable at any fucking time.
Yeah, he is incredible. So I thought maybe there'd be, I don't know why I thought there'd be a little controversy. I think I was a little higher on Rome than you were. But yeah, so yeah, 1, 2, 3 for me. It's MHJ, Nabers, Odunza. Let's talk about Odunza a little bit. Let's just go into the numbers for him, because he's got the big man numbers, the numbers you want to see from your big dog wide receiver.
Yeah, he has numbers that are better than I want to see from a big-ass wide receiver.
So for a guy who's 6'3", 215, and ran, what did he run? I think a 4, was it a 4.39 or a 4? It was like,
I was 4.42, something like that.
Yeah, so almost 4.3 speed, which is very impressive for a dude his size. He had 2.93 yards per route run, so he's still in like the 90th percentile, but a little bit below the first two. So that makes sense there, I guess. But he had the lowest drop rate of the three, just 3.2%. And his contested catch rate was 75%. That is an absurd. That man, you didn't throw 50-50 balls to Roma Dunza. You threw 75-25 balls to him because he would just, like, he's that good. And then his grade versus man coverage, 89.5. So just a tick below Malik Nabers. So he's also uncoverable in man-on-man situations. Just an absolute freak of nature. 13 touchdowns, almost 18 yards per catch, 1,600 yards receiving. Again, I looked, is actually very similar to, hold on.
Yeah, give me them typing noises.
Sorry, you know I love those. I'm trying to look up real quick. The year Larry Fitzgerald's last year at Pitt, when he won the Biletnikoff, what was his number? So Odunza, tell me this doesn't freak you out a little bit. Odunza had 92 receptions for 1,639 yards and 13 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Larry Fitzgerald had 92 receptions for 1,672 yards. He did have more touchdowns. He had 22 touchdowns, but very almost identical receptions and yardage numbers for those two in their final collegiate seasons. Like they are so similar. And Larry Fitzgerald was, God, what was Larry Fitzgerald's size exactly? Giving some more sweet, sweet typing. He was 6'3", 218. Rome, again, is 6'3", 215. So, I mean, very freakishly similar dudes. I cannot believe we are in a draft where I'm looking at a guy that I think a Larry Fitzgerald comp is sane and earned. And I'm also agreeing that that guy is wide receiver 3. That is fucking insane.
Yeah, the way I have been going about it in my head, in a normal draft, when we talk about wide receivers, there are basically three pools. You've got pool one, which is a guy who you think could be a number one wide receiver. You've got pool two, which is a guy who you think could be a good wide receiver, but he's kind of restricted to one wide receiver spot.
Right.
Usually it's slot. Sometimes it is an outside wide receiver, but you're like, you don't really want this guy
but
to
he's like a,
the number one
but
corner.
He's, well, you get, yeah. So you get true number one wide receivers who can run the full route tree, who have size, speed, etc.
Yeah.
Usually there's one, maybe two of those in a draft if you're lucky. Then you get guys who are like, well, he is a very good Z, meaning that he is fast. He can get vertical. Could maybe put up wide receiver one numbers in the right situation, but isn't really what you'd call a true wide receiver. To me, that's a guy like Zay Flowers last year was a dude that I saw like could be a very good Z. And even, you know, he would be your top wide receiver, but is he a true number one in the sense that he does literally everything, that he runs every route in the playbook, that he, no, he's a guy who's very good at the three or four things that he does do though. And then you get, you know, you get slot only specialists, things like that. This draft has, as I'm sure you're about to say, three of those do everything franchise elite
right.
wide receivers. Three of them.
Yeah, we have three guys here who, like, you would be insane to pass on. But to pick one, if you're first up, if you're New England or Arizona, you got to pass on the other two, which feels insane.
Yeah.
It feels insane to leave Nabers or Odunza on the board, but it's also, it would be completely insane not to just draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and feel really good about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, none of these guys, like in a normal year, Rome Odunza is by far the number one wide receiver. You don't
say how far, how far back do you have to go where one of these three, just going off of what you felt about them entering the draft, where one of these three isn't the number one wide receiver in a draft for you? Because, like,
I was going
definitely
back
last
this.
Year.
Yeah, not last year. Last year, okay, here's the thing, and we're going to get into this as we get into the rest of these prospects. We really need to answer the question, how low do you have to get in this draft before you hit Jaxon Smith and Jigba? Okay.
So 2022, good wide receiver draft, really. So the first wide receiver off the board in 2022 was Drake London. You had Garrett Wilson. You had Chris Olave. All of those guys, good. But just going off of how you felt about them as prospects, you take all three of those guys over. Garrett Wilson was, I think, my wide receiver one in that draft. Yeah, and I would take, Wilson. I'd take all three of these guys over Garrett Wilson, right?
No question.
Without question. So, I mean, at that point, so you're going back to 2021. You have, okay, so the first wide receiver. So, Jamar Chase. If they were in the same draft, would you take any of these three guys over Jamar Chase? I think I'd take Marvin Harrison Jr. over Jamar Chase.
He's definitely in this. The question is between Odunza and Chase, I think. I think Neighbors is a better prospect than Jamar Chase.
Okay.
But he's in parity with Odunza, which is insane to say about Jamar Chase. But he's very much in parity with that. It's wild.
It is absurd.
This draft related to this, next year's wide receiver draft. Oh boy. There's one guy. And that's it. So get a wide receiver this year, guys.
Yeah.
It's hard to, like, there's very little these guys don't do well. The one issue with Rome Odunza, you would say, is getting separation. But he has no problem with that because his contested catch rate is to such a level that I can't even comprehend a 75%.
Well, and I don't even, personally, I don't think he struggles to get separation. I think Washington ran routes with him that are more, for most people, they're lower percentage routes. They just are. But I think Washington was like, yeah, I mean, I could run the guy on a drag route and get separation. I could run him on a dig and he would get separation. Or I could just throw him 9 balls all fucking day and he's going to catch it because he is a goddamn beast. And that's basically what they did. So, yeah. Okay, so I think we've established these three guys are great. Here's my question. With Keenan Allen on board, because I think our answer to this a couple weeks ago would have been different. With Keenan Allen on board, is there a scenario still in which you would trade up a couple spots to get one of these guys just to ensure that you got one of them? And if so, how much would you be willing to give up for that?
So this doesn't really actually have anything to do with Keenan Allen, because to me, whether you draft a wide receiver or not, if you're doing that, then it's just because, you know, Keenan Allen is in his 30s. You've only got him for 1 year guaranteed. You don't know if you're going to re-sign him. So I don't think you consider this pick as like a need pick with relation to Keenan Allen, which is why to me, like, I wouldn't take Odunza over Neighbors, because I'm not like, well, Odunza does fit better in a room with both DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, because I'm not assuming Keenan Allen will be here beyond 1 year. I hope he will be. I like Keenan Allen a lot. But with Justin Fields gone, that was kind of the one thing I thought, like, maybe you float it to the Giants. Like, well, we'll give you Fields and our number one pick and to move up 3 spots. Does that work for you, Giants? And then you can have him compete with Daniel Jones. I think without Fields, there's nothing I would package to move up to that spot. 6 is really what I'm looking at. If you're trying to get up to 4, I don't even know if the Bears have the bullets. We would be using the second round pick from next year, right? From the Panthers, I think. And I think that's way too much. I think you stand pat at that point.
Okay.
So for me, the answer is no, I'm not moving up.
I'm still willing to do it if it's like 1 or 2 spots and the cost is no more than like the remaining 4 you have this year or like a 3 next year. But that's about, I wouldn't give up our second. I wouldn't give up the Panthers second at this point. Now, I guess the next question I have, if one of them is there at 9 and Ryan Poles takes someone else or trades down, how fatal is the stroke that you have?
If he chooses to trade down at that point, fatal stroke.
Fatal stroke.
If the reason he passed on them is for one other guy in particular, I'm okay with it. I'm going to leave that guy as a mystery, though. There is one other guy I would do this for. But I would not want to trade down. It's not Brock Bowers. I do not want another. I do not. We'll spoil that for later. There is one dude, if he happened to be at nine.
Would he ever be in offensive meetings with Brock Bowers?
I'm not going to tell you until we get there.
Well, now I'm not going to tell you until curiosity. We get there. Now you have my attention. Okay. Yeah. So,
but no, trading down would light me on fire. Absolutely. Yeah,
I think, and to be fair, I don't think that this is going to happen. I think if one of them is there, Ryan Poles is going to sprint to the podium. Everything that he and Fluss have said is makes me think that because they expect so many quarterbacks to go high, I think they are very excited about the possibility of a true blue chip prospect at nine. And I think they're preparing for three different scenarios. I think they would prefer one of the wide receivers be there. But if the three wide receivers are gone, I think then they are expecting that edge one on their board is going to be there. And again, you usually don't get a chance to draft your top pass rusher in any given draft. So yep. I think that's what they're thinking. But I also think they're thinking that if somehow edge one is gone and the three wide receivers are gone, then that means that Joe Alt, who might be the best left tackle prospect of the decade, is just sitting there at nine. And in which case, like, no, is that, I think that's not ideally the best case scenario that a lot of Bears fans want, but like, you know, we'll talk about this more next week when we get into the offensive line, but offensive tackle is a very premium position. You don't really get a chance to draft a guy who is a freakish elite athlete. By the way, Joe Alt's RAS score just got posted. It was 9.91. And it's also just one of the most polished elite pass protectors in college football in recent memory. Like, if that guy's there, you kind of got to do it and figure it out later. But yeah, so I think if they're there at nine and they trade down, I will be very upset. I think if they opt for edge one, I'm still a little upset, but understand it. If they opted for Joe Alt because he fell, I think I'd be kind of confused why you do that over the wide receiver. But I think I would understand that as well. But yeah, if they trade down with that much blue chip talent on the board at nine, I'm at the point where you stockpiled picks a little bit. You've really retooled the depth of this roster. We were talking about how few like obvious holes there were entering free agency, and they've patched most of them. Now is the time you got to add some dudes to your football team. You need some blue chip superstar talent. You're lacking in that. Stay and take a guy. And I think there are going to be guys to take.
I think so. I agree 100% with that. 110% with that. The Bears have put themselves in a position with the signing of Keenan Allen to do best player available, regardless of who is there. And I think you
have, and there's going to be a really fucking good player available. So I would, to me, you take the blue chipper over, especially because a trade down, unless you're trading down 10, 15 spots at this point, isn't even going to net you a two. It's going to net you like a three. And would I give up Roma Dunza for a lesser talent and a three? No. Would I give up Joe Alt for a lesser talent and a three? No. I'd rather take Joe Alt and then trade Braxton Jones for a three, probably, in that scenario. Like, you were talking franchise players, probably going to be there at nine. You just stick and take one. Anyways, all right. So I think we've covered the three big wide receivers. What I want to know, Travis, then, is let's say, after we've just said how we don't want the Bears to trade down, but let's say theoretically somehow they did.
Okay.
Say the New Orleans Saints.
They want a second round pick. I think, you know what? I think there's a possibility that one of these quarterbacks remains on the board.
Like, and
the
slides. Bears
could get something.
You think they could?
And I think it could be Jaden Daniels.
I think he's going to go on the record there.
I think maybe J.J. McCarthy goes off the board at three, and suddenly Jaden free falls.
Sliding. Slips.
And the Bears, there is one thing in this draft, I do think if the Bears are offered a mid to high second round pick when we don't have one, there's absolutely a chance that Poles does that.
Well, I think, so I was going to say, possibility, and this is something that Brad Spielberger, PFF, mocked the other day, because Ryan Ramczyk, the tackle for the Saints, is not recovering very well from a knee surgery. They said that could drag into the season. So if the Saints are looking tackle at 14, there are some other teams behind the Bears who might be thinking tackle, wanting to jump up there and take a tackle. So maybe you could extract a second round pick in that scenario. So like, so let's say the Bears moved down to pick 14.
Yeah.
They got a second out of it. So Travis, who is in your second tier of wide receivers? Who do you like and who do you dislike in that range? Because I've got some guys I like and I've got some guys that I distrust.
So we're talking about specifically in the middle of the first round.
Let me give you guys, let me give you guys who are in that second tier after the big three, according to the PFF big board. So right now their wide receiver four is Brian Thomas Jr. Wide receiver five they have is it Adonai or Adonai? I can never remember how it's Mitchell.
I'm pretty, you know what? I honestly, they call him AD.
AD.
He calls himself AD.
Oh, does he? Okay. All right. Because I always want to pronounce a guy's name correctly if that's how they want it pronounced. But if he says he's AD, then he's AD. So AD Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin, Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall. Those are the next couple of guys. Jermaine Burton. Those are the next couple of guys that they have. And we'll, you know, just for that, we'll also throw on Keon Coleman because people are very split on Keon Coleman. But so in that tier of guys, who do you like? Who do you distrust?
Yeah, because they're so his name is Adonai apparently.
Adonai. Okay,
but he, like I said, he says AD, so I don't really care. Okay. There isn't really, I like that you said distrust. I like that you said who is a guy who you distrust and not who you dislike, because there is a big group of dudes here who I like, who I would be totally fine with taking. And kind of like I said earlier, the question to me is, how far down this list do I have to get before I get to Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year, or Quentin Johnson, depending on how you were feeling. And it's kind of a ways. If I had to sort these guys, I do think number one for me after those top three guys would be A.D. Mitchell. It's the combination of speed and route running for me that would put A.D. over Brian Thomas. I think I might even have Troy Franklin after A.D. Mitchell and then Brian Thomas. It's not really a knock against Brian Thomas. I think you just... I think he's overshadowed significantly by Malik Nabers.
Okay, so wait, hold on. You're saying AD Mitchell is wide receiver four for you, basically?
Yeah, for me. And then I think Franklin would be five, and Thomas would be right after that. They are very, very close, those three dudes.
This is great.
My issue with Brian Thomas, and it's not really an issue, he doesn't, like, allegedly Brian Thomas runs a faster 40 than Malik Nabers. There's no... He does not play that way. So I don't like 40 times very much, because I don't think they tell you anything about how a guy runs on the field. Dudes practice the 40. Some of them practice it a lot to try to pump their draft stock, because that's what their agents tell them. Like, hey, the one thing people are saying about you is you're not fast. If you can run a really good 40, that's going to pump your draft stock a lot. I think that's what happened with Brian Thomas Jr. Brian is a very strong dude.
Wait,
I feel like
he
plays a lot more like Roma Dunza than he
Brian
does.
Brian Thomas did run a 40, though, right? Like, you know that.
Yeah,
right?
He did, okay. I think he ran a 40. I have for him on file is 4.33.
Yeah, he ran a 4.33.
Which is not how he plays in any. I'm just going to throw that out there. Right? He does not play like a dude here thinking 4.33, 40. But he plays a lot like Roma Dunza. He's a guy who is very reliable. He's big. He catches the ball. He is hard to knock the ball out of his hands. But I like the speed. This feels very weird, Kyle, because you and I are usually the guys who go for the big go up and get it guy. That's like our, I would say, if we have a stereotype for what we want out of a wide receiver,
if you will.
Yeah. It's good. Go up and get it, big guy. It's an Alshon Jeffrey kind of thing. But yeah, I like A.D. Mitchell. I just like the way he plays. I like the speed. I like the route running. I feel like in today's NFL, route running is the number one thing I look at from a guy who I'm projecting to be a potential number one wide receiver. And I am for Mitchell, Franklin, and Thomas. And I think out of those three, I like his route running the best. What are your thoughts? I haven't heard your thoughts on these guys.
Yeah, I know you haven't. That's why.
Yeah.
So the guy that I distrust the most of all of these wide receivers, the one that I have the biggest red flags
Mitchell.
On, the one that I don't know that I could trust is A.D. Mitchell.
Yes! Yeah! All right.
And this is, for me, okay, so on the tape, a lot of people, I've heard some people say that they think he's a guy who takes plays off. I don't think it's that. I do think Texas does some of that weird shit that Tennessee does, where on any given passing play, half the field is not actually really part of the play, so guys are basically running at half speed. to conserve energy. But it does make him hard to evaluate. And it puts these analytics that I'm about to cite also with a little bit of an asterisk, because I do think he could be better than the numbers. But at the same time, the numbers are concerning. So A.D. Mitchell, yards per route run, 1.72. And the history of first round wide receivers under 2 yards in that category, not super comforting. And then A.D. Mitchell versus man coverage, which I said is one that I really like to look at, was just 66.9. That is one of the lowest of the first round wide receivers. His contested catch rate for a dude who's 6'4", just 36.4%, not winning a lot of those.
I've got him at 6'2". So yeah, I think that 6'4 number is bullshit.
Oh, is it? I told it. I might have misread it. Was I thinking of? Oh, I think it's Troy Franklin who's 6'4". And yeah, no. If PFF has him at 6'4", 196 for A.D. Mitchell. Weird.
I think that's one of them cooked numbers.
So the history of guys with that level of production that got. So here is, I follow a great Twitter account called Football Insights. He does a lot of really good data analysis too. And he made a nice 4-quadrant chart looking at career EPA per snap for wide receivers and then career yards per route run for wide receivers. So in this particular chart, where you want to be is in the top right quadrant, as far top and to the right as you can. Here's the names in the top right quadrant. Marvin Harrison Jr., Jalen Waddle, Jackson Smith and Jigba, CeeDee Lamb, Devonta Smith, Jamar Chase, Malik Nabers, Troy Franklin, we'll talk about him a little bit, he's a data darling, Chris Olave, Justin Jefferson, Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, Brandon Ayuk, Jordan Addison, Ladd McConkey, Roma Dunza. This is the top right quadrant. That sounds like a pretty good quadrant, wouldn't you say, Travis?
That's pretty darn good, man.
Here's some guys in the bottom left quadrant, which would mean low EPA per snap and low yards per route run. Here's some fellas in that region. You've got Henry Ruggs, N'Keal Harry. You have I don't know who this A. Smith. I don't know who that is from Texas A&M. Is that a guy I should know? Jahan Dotson. Zay Flowers, so he had a pretty good rookie year. So not some guy, Brant B. Means from Pittsburgh. Can't say I know who that is. Jalen Rager. So you would say all a right. Less exciting quadrant. And yeah. Then all the way over in the farthest.
Very similar bust to the way that A.D. Mitchell would be a bust, actually, in the a lot farthest, of
us. Yep, and the guy who is basically in the farthest leftist corner that you can go of this chart, which is the most danger zone, is A.D. Mitchell. He is basically, in terms of any kind of advanced analytic you want to look at, he is one of the least productive wide receivers who would get first round consideration. Now, I said I want to address this issue. Quinn Ewers is booty. He's bad. He is
very important.
Cheeks. He is not very good throwing the ball beyond 10 yards down the field, and that is the kind of wide receiver that A.D. Mitchell is.
Where's Xavier Worthy on that list?
Xavier Worthy.
That interests me.
He is – okay, so he is – a lot higher in yards per route run. So A.D. Mitchell for his yards per route run for his career is, and actually the 1.72 he had this year, I think actually the best of his career.
Oh God.
For his career, he's at like 1.5 yards per route run. It's not good. Xavier Worthy is a little better. He's at like 2.2 yards per route run, but he is, they're basically equivalent in terms of EPA per snap. So Xavier Worthy is also still in that bottom left quadrant, but he did fare a little better in terms of yards per route run. So
it would concern me. It would concern me a lot more if Worthy had gone beyond.
Wasn't in the same quadrant. So yeah, there is the asterisk there that I do think Quinn Ewers is there, and this is to say that I don't like A.D. Mitchell, because I see the same things you see in terms of why he could be good. But you know why I do the analytics. You know why I do the numbers. I'm worried about bust factor. I do. I worry about the bet. And I think just in terms of the company he's in historically and the lack of production, A.D. Mitchell scares me a bit. I don't think he's my wide receiver 4.
That's very convincing. That's very convincing. And we haven't mentioned it yet this podcast. I like to mention this every year when we talk about wide receivers. If there is one position in the NFL that is really hard to evaluate through tape,
it is
wide receiver. Like, because you know what? A lot of guys look good at wide receiver in college.
It's so hard to figure out what will win.
Okay, you know what? You're convincing me here. That is scary territory.
So, I, honest to God, I think my wide receiver, and you know what? Brian Thomas Jr., he's tough for me too, because we talked about how Jaden Daniels basically only throws two routes, hitches and slot fades.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think that means for Brian Thomas's route tree? Because Malik Nabers is the guy that they, when they did actually run other stuff, Malik Nabers is the guy that they ran that for. Crossing route, when they needed a dig, when they needed that, it was Malik Willis, or it was Malik Nabers running those routes. Brian Thomas is very much hitch, vertical. Mm-hmm. Hitch,
yes,
vertical. Now that's not to say he can't learn all of these things, but you know, he's not quite as far left in the scary zone on that quadrant that I'm talking about as A.D. Mitchell, but he is also in that bottom left quadrant. A lot of these guys in the second tier are in this bottom left quadrant. And so that almost, how many guys in this class are actually in that bottom left quadrant almost makes you feel better about the group on average, because I think that's what you're looking at, is a lot of really talented wide receivers who were on a lot of really bad offenses. I think there are a lot of these guys are being deflated by bad quarterback play. I totally agree with that. But yeah, still,
I can tell you what I texted you while I was watching all the tape of Jaden Daniels, and therefore watching all the tape of Nabers and Brian Thomas, which was, they just use Brian Thomas like a tight end. Like, all he does is he runs the 10-yard line, turns around, and he is the panic button.
He is hook or vertical. It's hook or vertical. So I'm a little wary of Brian Thomas too. Believe it or not, I think the guy that I kind of almost feel the best about as wide receiver 4 is, and he's been one of those guys. Now, I think you're still looking at dudes who have that potential upside of being a true number 1, because I would agree, if you were looking at the next tier of guys, like who has the biggest chance of becoming that wide receiver 1 if everything hits, is still A.D. Mitchell and it's still BTJ. But I think the bust factor, the risk of them just not being anything at all, is also really high when you get like a N'Keal Harry where it turns out like, oops, no separation.
Shit, they suck. yeah, it does happen.
Oops, no hands.
yes.
Oops, no routes. Like they're in that, like not to comp either guy to N'Keal Harry, but if they fail, like you said, they'll fail like a N'Keal Harry, where that just winning solely on speed and size and two routes in college does not translate to being an NFL wide receiver. If they fail, they'll fail like that guy failed.
Yeah, Harry and you mentioned Jalen Reagor, very much the exact same way that A.D. Mitchell will fail if he does. He's going to be remembered in exactly the same breath as those two dudes.
But like I kind of think for me, a guy I'd really like, but I do think he has a defined role. He's not going to be your true wide receiver 1, but I kind of like Ladd McConkey. I do.
I knew you were going to say Ladd McConkey.
The analytics are good for what he is. He's not a jump ball guy. You know, the contested catch rate, although the contested catch rate is not terrible for what he is, but the yards per route run is outstanding. The hands are very good. The receiving grade's very good. He runs a very nice route tree. I think a lot of people, a lot of people hear Ladd McConkey, and I think you're thinking of, I know why you're thinking it, but you're probably thinking of like your Edelman and your, you know, mm-hmm. your deceptively quick white guy slot receiver. But this to me, I've seen people put Eddie Royal comps on him. To me, he's kind of like, I dare say, like a better, almost slightly bigger Darnell Mooney, in my opinion. Like, I think this is a guy who can be a really good slot receiver for you in the NFL, but can also be a Z on the outside, can carry the vertical, can move around the whole field. I don't think he's slot only at all. He's not a specialist like that. And I do think, yeah, he's a guy that I trust. Like I said, the ceiling is not quite there with some of those big, strong, fast dudes like A.D. Mitchell and BTJ, but I think the versatility that they are lacking is absolutely there. I think the polish and the route running ability is there. I think the hands are a little better. I think the speed is far better than anyone wants to give him credit for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, for obvious reasons, like you already mentioned.
I mean, he ran a 4.39, for God's sakes. Like, this is not... I mean,
he plays fast, too.
Yeah, he plays fast. Absolutely. So I think if I'm in that second tier of guys, the one that I think is the safest pick, probably a Ladd McConkey. Now, if you want to take a guy who has size and analytics, it's that one, the data darling of this draft, the one that I think is being underrated, based off of just like absurd numbers, Troy Franklin. Put up some absurd numbers. And he's 6'3", very skinny though. 6'3", 187 is pretty...
Yes.
But he...
Well, luckily, one of the things I really wanted to talk about is the weight thing is probably no longer a concern given
how that kind of got thrown out last year. You know, we did such a great job. You know, we've been bragging about how we did such a great job, I think, with the quarterbacks last year, with the offensive and the tackle linemen. Prospects last year, yeah. With the offensive linemen. I think we have to sit here in front of the world and especially say to the Minnesota Vikings fans.
Yeah.
Our bad, guys.
We fucked up.
Our bad. We missed it. The small wide receivers, the skinny. The game has changed. It's left us behind.
The little guys just dominated.
The little guy. Man. This is the year. I mean, fucking Tank Dell did some shit. Josh Downs did some shit. Zay Flowers, Jordan Addison. To be fair, Zay Flowers was the guy that we thought was fast enough, even despite the size, could do it. But yeah, Zay Flowers did some shit. Jordan Addison did some shit. So the skinny dudes, we got to live with them. They're here to stay, I think.
Yeah.
And they're not. They are what they are. But no, Troy Franklin. So from an analytics standpoint, you know, 81 receptions, 1,383 yards, 14 touchdowns. That's the basic box score stuff, but 3.32 yards per route run, absurdly high. Low contested catch rate, which again, not what you want to see from a bigger dude, although again, skinny big dude, but still tall. But grade versus man coverage, 82.2. Let's see here, where else did he, Troy Franklin, he was. So in this class, basically, he ranked fourth in yards per route run, overall, 10th in yards per route run versus man, 12th in overall production grade. He had an overall production score of 88 from NFL.com. Troy Franklin has just produced by every metric that there is. But he seems to be the guy that everyone's a little lower on. Physically than a lot of these other dudes. And I do think part of that is because that Oregon offense, I mean, I watched a lot of Bo Nix more than many people probably should. And that offense, it's so many screens, so many non-routes that don't even look at the middle of the field. It's very cartoonish. A lot of its production's a little manufactured. There's a lot of yards after the catch, a lot of, you know, clear it out and get it to him in space kind of stuff. So that's why I think McConkey is the one that I feel a little bit better about in terms of coming by that excellent production legitimately. But still, it's Franklin's got out. If you gave me A.D. Mitchell's tools with Troy Franklin's production, that's clear wide receiver four for me. But, you know, it's... So it's very hard for me. Like, A.D. Mitchell is just a guy who, like I said, I watched him on the tape I did see the things that people are seeing that they like. But man, he scares me a little. He really does. He's in such bad company. Troy Franklin, I look at the numbers jump out and I watch him on the tape, but I wouldn't say he scares me, but I'm also not like wowed either. I don't see like he ran a 4.41. I don't see, which is good. You know, at 6'3", 4.41's not bad. But he also like the agility doesn't strike me that great. I don't want to overrate combine drills, but you know, you watch the gauntlet drill at the combine. And Keon Coleman, who ran an abysmal 40, looked so much faster and smoother, though, during the gauntlet drill, just like not slowing down as he's running full speed and making all those catches. Troy Franklin looked a lot less fluid in space and at game speed, even though he ran a much better 40 time.
Yeah.
And then I guess, should we talk about Keon Coleman a little bit, too?
Like, I just kind of wanted to bring something up compared to last year. So last year we talked about a lot, all these guys. You see them as slot guys. We really didn't see them as outside guys. Maybe some of them could have. The only guy who we thought, this is a guy who at some point might have a full route tree, who could maybe be a number one guy, was Quentin Johnston. This draft, we have a lot of guys who have kind of the opposite issue. Guys who, should they fail at outside concepts, should they fail as a number two wide receiver, as a Z or X guy, they're not
going to
slip inside.
You don't see them as slot guys. You don't see
AD, Troy Franklin. They are definitely not going inside. Brian Thomas is nowhere near a slot wide
receiver. Last year's draft had a lot of high ceiling, high floor guys. I felt very confident. You know, even at Josh Downs, I wasn't very high on the size and everything, but I was like, I mean, I see him producing in the slot.
Yeah.
Tank
and
Dell.
That's why you mentioned Ladd McConkey. He is a guy who you would have seen last year, but this year he's a rare duck.
Yeah.
Like, you got him, and you've got maybe like Roman Wilson as these.
Roman
like,
Wilson's
another dude. These are going to be good slot guys, but not much else, maybe. You know, maybe not a massive upside, but big floor guys.
Yeah.
There's a risk to Brian Thomas, to A.D. Mitchell, to Troy Franklin that is not present with a guy like Ladd McConkey.
I kind of feel like Ricky Pearsall is also below
Pearsall. Sure,
he's below Roman Wilson for me, but he's another one that is like a built, ready-made slot receiver. Jermaine Burton from Alabama, another guy that's in that thing for me where. Absolutely great slot guy, absolutely dominant over the middle. Jermaine Burton's another guy. If you're looking for a slot guy, Burton, Roman Wilson, those are the guys I'd be targeting if I could in the second round, third round maybe.
I think there's guys in Franklin. That's who you're looking at, right?
There's guys in Franklin and Mitchell who and BDJ who it's like either you fix the things you need to fix and you become like a dominant outside ball winner in the NFL. Or I'm not sure you offer much value at all. You could be N'Keal Harry, where you're literally not worth putting on the field. You're Equanimeous St. Brown, where it's like, okay, sure, you got straight.
Not even
speed,
that.
But let's see.
Not even that. You can't even block.
Yeah. Like, that's true, because you're 200 pounds. You can't block. So that part's a problem. That is, So,
like, Troy Franklin ain't going out. A.D. Mitchell ain't going out there and fucking blocking for you. Like, these guys aren't even wide receiver fours. If they fail.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess in that, so in that second tier, I guess I would say my guy's probably McConkey, the guy that I'm probably the most distrustworthy. Can you use that word that way?
Mistrustworthy?
The guy that I distrust the most, probably A.D. Mitchell. The guy, and your guy, so is A.D. Mitchell still your guy after all this? After I said all that, or
that does freak me out.
It freaks you out a little bit.
I'll tell you this: if it were the Bears at that spot, see, because we're talking about overall right now. If it's the Bears at that spot, if they trade into that middle of the first round area where A.D. Mitchell is going to be available, that is not the dude that I am taking. I probably agree with you on Ladd McConkey if they're in that 19-20-21 range. Because I just nailed down that slot position. You don't need to gamble on a guy. You don't need another outside presence right now. Just take the sure thing if you've made the horrible decision to trade down. But yeah, let's get it. You know I want to talk about Keon Coleman. Now we're getting into the range of guys who are going to be boom or bust. They are gambles, right? And Keon Coleman's the number one gamble in this draft.
He is. So the 40 time really spooked the shit out of people.
And I've already said I don't give a fuck. Because, I mean, you and I watch the same tape. Is he a fucking 4'6", 40 guy when he plays?
No. Keon Coleman is the dude. Okay, so he's the dude that I want to bring. Because his contested catch rate this year was just 33.3%. But that, to me, is a dude where I am like, that Jordan Travis did not give him a chance on so many of those wounded ducks. And all this has to be understood in terms of, like, where are you taking him? You know, because, like, Keon Coleman, I do think with the 40 time, with the relative lack of production this year, no, he is not a guy that I feel super comfortable taking round one at this point. But I think if you are picking in the second round and Keon Coleman is in the board, you sprint to hand in the card. In round two, I mean, very much like Alshon coming out, like,
agreed.
Big, slow. The 40 time, Alshon's workouts did not blow anybody away. There were the rumors that he couldn't.
That's another case where at the time we were like, that is bullshit. like I'm glad that depressed his value, because in that draft we were like, please take Alshon Jeffrey. This is an absolute, like, he has been assassinated by his workout.
I will say, like, for Keon Coleman, for example, last year his contested catch rate was 62.5%. For his career, it's 45.8%. So I don't think 1 year of contested year data that was pretty disappointing means that much, especially when I thought Jordan Travis and then the people who replaced Jordan Travis were even worse. Like, he didn't get a lot of very catchable targets. His yards per route run also were not, you know, they weren't impressive this year. It was only 1.74. But all of this, again, all of this is to be understood in the terms of, like, where you're taking them. Brian Thomas Jr. is a guy that I don't love in the top 15, but he's a guy that I do love around pick 20 or 25, you know.
Agreed.
A.D. Mitchell's a guy that I don't love in the top 15. He's a guy that I would love at pick 34. Like, it really just matters where you're taking them and how much risk that carries.
Yeah, if you get pick 14 for the Bears, the answer, I think, is Leatu Latu, probably not a wide receiver, right? Like, right, I don't think you take any of these second-order wide receivers.
Right. I think that, I think if you're the Bears, either you get the sure thing, not the sure thing, none of these guys are forever technically sure. I think either you're getting a tier one, top three wide receiver, or you're trading a far enough down that you're taking a different position in round one, and you're targeting the tier three guys at wide receiver in round two or round three.
Agreed.
Because there are some, you know, Keon Coleman is a guy that I would love. Just in a straight ranking it right now, I would put A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr. over Keon Coleman for sure. But if you ask me, would I rather spend a top 15 pick on to take Brian Thomas Jr. or trade down and say I get Keon Coleman at, let's say, pick 41? I'm taking Keon Coleman at 41 every time. I would feel much better with the risk profile at that part of the draft.
The guy with the best potential to make everybody look like a giant dumbass in this draft, one way or the other, Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I think if he'd gotten better, for the type of wide receiver he is, if he'd gotten better quarterback play, he looks totally different. He really does. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's try to wrap up here.
The other guys that I would have in that tier have to be Xavier Worthy and Xavier Leggett. The two Xaviers would be in the same tier as guys who I'm just like, you are making a bet on raw ability, and you are... these guys could flame out so fast. Honestly, a guy who has a 40 time as suspicious as Xavier Worthy is usually going to go down my board. That usually doesn't bring you up my board for me. I'm usually like, this motherfucker worked at that 40 for months until he got a 4.2 just so he could put it on the board at the combine.
Look, call me Magneto, because I don't trust Xavier.
All right, good.
Either one. Xavier Worthy, I mean, that's the John Ross thing, like, from a couple years ago. It's like, come on, you're 4.240. None of that shows up on tape. Like I said, he's in that bottom left corner that we were talking about a little bit ago. I don't trust Xavier Worthy. I would rather gamble on Leggett, but, I mean, Leggett is another guy. He's in that area that I really just don't trust a lot of guys. He had an explosive one-year jump as a 23-year-old. He is just bigger and faster than everybody. He still needs the posh as the route runner.
He's only playing outside. You're not putting him inside.
Now, that said, some people did compare him a little bit to, like, Velus Jones, but he was much more productive in his one really great season than Velus Jones. I mean, 1,255 yards, 17.7 yards per reception. The yards per route run was very good, 3.15. The grade versus man coverage, 85.6. Again, Xavier Legette, I would absolutely rather gamble on Xavier Legette than Xavier Worthy. But again, I would not do it with like a top 40 pick. You know, you start talking back half of round two, right. I start to think about it. But, you know, the risk there just of the one-year production, the older guy, a lot of his stuff was manufactured again. It was screens. It was that kind of thing. But now also part of that was a function of the South Carolina offense. Like when I talk about Spencer Rattler, that offensive line was the worst thing I've ever seen. They couldn't block for a lot of deeper routes. So, you know, screens were a necessary survival skill for South Carolina. So I don't necessarily hold that against Legette either. Like I said, I would gamble on Legette. If I have to pick an Xavier, I will gamble on Legette over Worthy. But both of them, risky profiles career-wise.
Yeah, I agree. I think also Keon Coleman just has a much larger upside. I think for those guys, if they hit, you're going to find like a good number two wide receiver who's going to play outside, who's going to run two routes really well. And that's kind of it. And especially for where they're going, with like what I've seen mocked, which is like late first, early second, I don't like either of those guys. That scares the hell out of me. Like you said, if you're going to take the risk, man, fucking take the risk. Take Keon Coleman and just be like, maybe we just got the dude. And otherwise, we just throw him out in a couple of years, maybe. You know, if he's the guy who we're afraid he is. But
honestly, that is this draft in a nutshell. Like, it's so deep. But there are three guys total that I'm like, surefire number one NFL wide receivers.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of guys to where the risk is enough that it's not that I don't think Keon Coleman, it's not that I don't think Brian Thomas Jr. is a better prospect than Keon Coleman. But I think the bust factor is almost high enough that, like, for me, I can stomach the risk of Keon Coleman at 40 better than I can stomach the risk of Brian Thomas Jr. at 15. So for sure. But, you know, your risk appetite may vary. I mean, for Brian Thomas, the tools are absurd. They really are. I'm not going to sit here on draft night when Brian Thomas inevitably goes and be like, that team just made a fucking mistake. I'm going to be like, you got to gamble on those tools. Because, I mean, not everyone, knock on wood, can't believe I'm fucking saying this, not everyone is entering the draft from a position of strength at wide receiver like the Chicago fucking Bears, you know? Not everyone's got it.
Oh, right?
Can you believe I just said that? Not a lot of people are entering the draft with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. If you don't have, you know, let's say if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, who just lost Calvin Ridley, who just gave money to Gabe Davis because Trent Baalke is not in prison for some reason. He's just allowed to commit these crimes annually, and we as a society do nothing about it as Trevor Lawrence suffers. If you're the Jacksonville Jaguars and you're sitting there, I think they're at pick 17, pick 18, like, you got to think about Brian Thomas Jr. You got to do it. I'm not going to sit here and shit on the Jaguars when they do that. I'm like, you got to try to get Trevor Lawrence's guy. And at that point in the draft, but I'm just saying I would rather either get me one of those top three guys at 9 or skip that risk entirely because we don't need to reach at wide receiver right now with Keenan Allen on board. Skip entirely and take a crack at that tier of guys in late round 2, round 3. So,
All right. We're going a little bit over, but we wanted to talk about one guy. I would be remiss not to bring up one of the other guys who is also just maybe the best prospect at his position that I have ever seen, which is Brock Bowers. Just the tight end that does everything. An incredible pass catcher. A lovely blocker. Like a very good inline blocking tight end. Just kind of does everything that you could want a tight end to do. I know you brought it up at the beginning, Kyle. If Brock Bowers is sitting there and all three top tier wide receivers are off the board and the Bears take Brock, even though we have a top 7 tight end right now, how are you feeling?
I'm mad. I've gone back and
forth. Isn't that weird to say?
I've gone back and forth on this so many times, but like, the history, the value there is not there at tight end. And the history of first round tight ends is just, it's so fucking bad. And I know people say Brock Bowers is different, but that is what people have said about every one of these guys. That's how every one of these teams has talked themselves in to those first round tight ends. What is the list of?
Yeah. Is he from Iowa? No, then don't do it.
And the Iowa guy's always there in round two. That's Laporta right. was a second Iowa round. The Iowa guy's always there.
Iowa guy is not here this year. Luke Lachey is the number one tight end next year. Take Iowa guy next year.
So, I mean, like Dalton Kincaid for the Bills last year, did he really give them that much that you're like, ah, I gotta risk it all for the next Dalton Kincaid?
No. I mean, hit, like
all Trey McBride pretty much has Trey McBride fucking done? Oh, no. Trey McBride was a second round pick. I can't read.
It was the Kyle Pitts. They drafted the other one, right?
Kyle Pitts. I mean, I'm thinking with Kirk Cousins, he's going to do a lot more this year. But again, Kyle Pitts. Are you really, like, over all the other options that you could have, are you really look betting on? And Kyle Pitts was about as different gets at that position. You know, TJ Hockenson.
Now, here's the deal. Bowers is not a Kyle Pitts. He is much more in line with the Laporta, the Hockenson, the Kittle. I know I just named three Hawkeyes. I'm sorry. Yeah. The Cole Kmet. He is an inline tight end who is also very good running routes.
It's just so fucking. I'm just going to read the list. Here's a list of first round tight ends lately. We've got Dalton Kincaid. We've got Kyle Pitts. We've got TJ Hockenson, Noah Fant. We have Hayden Hurst, OJ Howard, Evan Ingram. David Njoku. Eric Ebron. Tyler Eifert. Jermaine Gresham. That's going back to 2010. Like, which of those guys, which of any of those guys, even the good ones, are you sitting there saying, yeah, that's worth the 9th overall pick?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm not there.
If this were a year where we didn't have somehow just the tight end locked up who does everything I want to,
I would say this. The only scenario in which I was okay with, sorry to cut you off.
Oh, you're good.
Where the only scenario but I would have,
I'll finish it off. If we didn't have Cole Kmet and we took Brock Bowers, I would be like, that's great. This guy is a great tight end. He's fantastic. If that's what we needed, a good blocking tight end who is also a really good route runner, who also catches everything. I mean, Brock Bowers is a different sort of dude, but in the way that I like. In the way that I like tight ends, not in the way that Kyle Pitts is a tight end. Then, yeah, I would be pleased. But the value isn't there for the Bears right now.
Brock Bowers, Brock Bowers could only happen at this point if he's a best player available pick.
Yeah.
And then you literally have to ask yourself, can a tight end ever truly be the best player available at pick 9? My answer is just no. I would be mad. I would. And then beyond Brock Bowers, I guess real quick, last thing, are there any other tight ends in this draft who even really intrigue you? What's the Iowa tight end look like this year, Travis? Is he any good?
The Iowa tight end in the draft is Eric All, who's not really an Iowa tight end. He transferred in from Michigan and then he got hurt halfway through the year. He is not very good.
So you don't claim him. He's not one of your
people. I would not suggest taking him. He is not the usual Iowa tight end, which is usually a guy who played 7-on-7 in North Dakota and came in as a linebacker. And then they converted him to a tight end and then he turned into Jesus. Yeah. That's not who it is. That's Luke Lachey, who is already the consensus number one tight end next year, and he deserves it.
They got the guy from 98 Degrees is playing tight end for the
That's right. Nick's brother. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually is somehow related to him.
Fantastic.
He looks like a Greek god, and he is. Don't worry, he'll go in the first round next year and he'll deserve it. But yeah, we just were set at that spot. We're already paying a guy and he earned his deal. There's not really any reason to take someone over that, which is hilarious because Brock Bowers really is a great prospect and he's in the mold of the tight ends that I like. But yeah, we just don't need him. We just, I guess we could wrap this up. Our hope is that one of these three wide receivers is there, right? Just give me one of them at 9. Is that what you're hoping for?
Yeah. I mean, just let them be there. Let us sprint to the podium. I do think it's one of those things where, you know, it's pretty hard if the three wide receivers, it's pretty hard to envision a scenario where the three wide receivers are gone. And that still, and that is truly, truly upsetting to me, because I still feel like in the scenario where all three wide receivers are gone before nine, the Bears are probably picking edge one, OT one. They are in a ridiculous value trade down spot. There's so many ways to win even in that scenario. But even despite all that, God, I would just, you know, I'm most likely to be Rome if it's one of them. And if Rome Odunza's there at nine, like if we got a guy that I can reasonably confident can be Larry fucking Fitzgerald at nine, holy shit, that would be really cool. Please let it happen. I deserve this. I'm a good person most of the time.
Absolutely.
Like, don't check my Twitter replies. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Praying for one of those three guys to be there.
All right.
Absolutely.
This is a good discussion. It's a super good wide receiver class.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of tight ends and you thought we'd actually discuss the tight ends in depth, I'm really sorry to let you down. But yeah, there's just so much. And we could have done as many episodes on the wide receivers in this draft as we did on the quarterbacks, because there are still guys that, like, I could talk for a long time about Malachi Corley. Jalen McMillan is interesting to me. Devontae Walker sucks. I think anyone... You know, I will say
you,
that
you just you're down on North Carolina wide receivers. You got owned last year being down on a UNC wide receiver. Like, do you know what Tez Walker was dealing with this season?
Drake May. He was dealing with the letting struggles. Down Drake May is
being double covered every game after not playing for multiple games because they told him he was ineligible.
The UNC wide receiver core was, I would not touch. Javon Baker is a guy that I think is a really intriguing sleeper. Jamari Thrash at Louisville. No one's looking at him.
We're going into Central Florida.
Malachi Corley. I will say this. If you are thinking like, hey, maybe the Bears should pair Brendan Rice with Caleb Williams, I'm going to say
Kyle,
no.
You didn't say Jalen Polk's name once. I've heard you talk about Jalen Polk for weeks.
I like Jalen. That's how deep this wide receiver class is.
You have been hyping Jalen Polk as a guy for the Bears to take in the third round.
I don't get me wrong. He's a guy that I do not like above round three. Because he's not, the speed is not there, and he's not like a slot guy either. He's more like a true two potentially, in my opinion. But like, I do like him as a value pick in round three. Like, it's a deep, deep class. We could have gone into so much more detail. So, anyways, thanks for tuning in, folks. We will see you next week when we talk about the offensive line.
StartKyleOrton@gmail.com. Send us any questions you have, something you want us to talk about on the pod, harassment
or
nudes.
Yeah, oh, please, please with the nudes. Okay.
Also, Kyle's @StartKyleOrton on X. The L is an I. If you want to find him, don't worry, you'll find him. Just go in the direction of where people.
Did you
are
actually
yelling.
Refer to it as X? I don't fuck. It's Twitter. We don't do.
I don't use it at all.
We
so
don't respect. Elon Musk on this podcast. It's not how we operate. So it's Twitter.
Fuck Elon Musk.
If you want to look for me, as Travis said, it is @StartKyleOrton, but the L is an I due to reasons we need not discuss here that cost us the original Start Kyle Orton Twitter account. But yeah, look me up there.
Anyway. Due to Kyle's love of blackjacks as weapons, unfortunately, we don't have access to that account any longer.
All right, later, folks. I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.